Well, it is that time. Your office may be a little bit empty at the moment with people rushing off for a Euro summer, bit of a vacay action. And with travel returning to full swing, there's been a bit of pushback across parts of Europe from locals in many cities, including Venice and Barcelona, with locals arguing their cities have been turned into playgrounds for the privileged, where rents have skyrocketed as a result of over-tourism, the culture's been commodified, and everyday life becomes a spectacle. And that's nothing new. I was in Barcelona a few years ago, and there was a noticeable anti-tourism sentiment in some of the graffiti that you'd see around the place. And experts are now warning that Australia might be on a similar path. Hotspots like Byron Bay, which has changed so much in the last 15 years, hasn't it, with tourism, and the Great Ocean Road, feeling the pressure of short-term rentals, peak season gridlock, and influencer-fueled crowds, are we heading towards our own over-tourism crisis? So let's unpack what that looks like. To do that, I'm pleased to say we've got Adjunct Professor in Tourism Management at the University of South Australia, Freya De Beer, on the line. Thank you so much for making the time this morning.
It's nice to be with you, Nelson.
No problems at all. So what? Give us a sense of what does over-tourism look like? Because obviously cities would want a number of tourists, great for the economy, etc. But at what point does it potentially get too much?
Well, it's a really subjective thing. The term describes when the social and ecological carrying capacity of a place is exceeded, and then the local people become impacted and unhappy with the tourist. But that's a really subjective view that people have. But we do see really high disproportionate ratios between tourists and locals, which can often be a sign of the problem. So you do get sort of numerical signs that the carrying capacity is being exceeded. And what it does is it damages either temporarily or more longer term the quality of life of the local community.
Yep. And that's what's happening at the moment. There's a lot of people angry about this in Venice and Barcelona, right?
That's right. And yeah, there's different circumstances in the different places. So for Venice, one of the arguments around the old part of the city where the tourists all want to flock to is that the local people have actually been displaced, and that the services, you know, the thing that makes a community able to live, like corner shops with food to buy and local cafes, have been displaced by souvenir shops and things catering to the tourists. In Barcelona, the issue is things like cruise ships coming in and dropping thousands of passengers in one go. And then all of those visitors in a very short time frame want to see the exact same iconic sites. And yeah, the local backlash is getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah. You do notice that in places like Venice, where I can't recall seeing a local last time I was there, and it almost becomes a bit like a theme park, and it becomes highly exclusive, and people can't afford to live there anymore.
That's right. That's one of the big things, is things like cost inflation and the fact that infrastructure costs mean the taxes that sometimes people have to pay becomes too much for the local economy. And there's an impact even on tourism workers, that they can't find accommodation nearby where they want to work, and they're not making living wages off of one job. So there's a multiple range of impacts that impact communities. And the tourism authorities, the governing authorities, are not managing things very well and not listening to the local community. So it's worsening year by year.
Yeah. And do we run the risk of this possibly happening in Australia? I note in your excellent piece in The Conversation, Byron Bay is a place you mentioned.
I think Byron Bay is probably one of the most obvious ones because it has changed so significantly, and it has many of the problems I've been describing. And I think we need to be careful. It is not on our horizon very soon, but you do find communities, you know, along the New South Wales coast, coastal communities often can be the ones complaining about this.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Great Ocean Road, as the article mentioned, is another. But we do get temporary phenomenon as well. So with influencers, you'll find them taking images of an iconic site like Salt Lake and Flood, and you know the way the water reflects off of the Salt Lake.
Yeah.
The people following those influencers then want to be able to capture that and recreate it in their images. And so you can have a flock of people temporarily and to places that don't have infrastructure to support their visitation.
I'd say that happens a lot. I traveled with a partner once who pretty much found everywhere she wanted to go by virtue of influencers. And it pretty much dictated our entire trip.
Yeah, the media, the social media influence is very big. And you find that even in the European cities, that it shapes the way we view things. And the way that you prove you've been there is capturing yourself with that same, you know, iconic image that you've seen social media post and go viral. So, you know, even the Trevi Fountain in Italy is one that, you know, you've got to get a picture of yourself throwing the coin into the fountain.
Of course.
So then the authorities have to do things to manage it, and that's not been very popular. Things like taxes and rationing access to places, or even blocking tourists temporarily. So, yeah, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah. Is it an issue with town planning? Because we want to have these places reclaim, you know, the sense of what they are, like Byron Bay, an iconic hippie community in Australia, Venice, you know, just a beautiful ancient city. Is it a matter of being able to ensure there's enough dwellings and other necessities so that the locals can continue to live there whilst catering for the tourist influx?
I think that's really important, that the trend in these years have been to reduce regulation on tourist and tourism. And we'll see it even in Australia with our tourism plans, that the content of them often say reduce government red tape that restricts tourism development and tourism entrepreneurship. So I do think that that's a problem. But it's also a matter of the fact that the locals don't feel involved in the decision-making around tourism. And so that's why I point to this idea that over-tourism is about this perception. And so the way that you also get locals on board with supporting tourism is make sure that their voices are heard, listened to, and included in the decision-making that we make, so that they can have an input into the trade-offs. Because the fact is, tourism does have negative impacts, but it's about managing those impacts and making choices about, you know, the economic benefits that you gain from tourism versus some of the negative social and ecological impacts that occur. I would like to say Byron Bay has done something really interesting that I think we could all learn from. The youth in Byron a few years back got concerned about the impacts of tourism, and so they began a campaign, and it led to a pledge for tourists, and it's called the Byron Way Pledge. And that told tourists what their principles of responsible tourism would be. And it was a way of engaging visitors to say, we want you to come, but we want you to understand the difficulties that we may experience. And so change your behavior to support good living here when you visit.
I love that.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful. And unfortunately, the clock has got us, Professor, but thank you so much for making the time this morning.
I've loved talking to you. Thank you.
No worries. That is the wonderful adjunct professor in tourism management at the University of South Australia, Freya Higgins-Day-Biol here.